It's time once again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy. Right here in Residence 104. Yeah, 104.4. Hello, 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 Stacy.
Hello, the people have been demanding this, Max Kaiser. They've been demanding it. They've been demanding our Truth About Markets.
Oh, yes. Well, I see something interesting that the Walt Disney Company has trademarked something interesting here. Yes.
Tell us, what is it?
SEAL Team 6?
No.
Yeah.
Oh my God, a Disney film? SEAL Team 6? This is the secret group of Navy SEALs that allegedly assassinated the alleged bin Laden?
Right, so Disney trademarked SEAL Team 6, a perfect example of a big media company looking to capitalize on current events. The Walt Disney Company has trademarked SEAL Team 6, which also happens to be the name of the elite special forces team that killed Osama bin Laden. So we can expect a movie, a sequel, and a theme park. And the question is, who's going to play Osama bin Laden in the movie? I would imagine they're going to go with Jeffrey Rush. He plays a part in the Pirates of the Caribbean series. And he seems like a very versatile actor. So get Jeffrey Rush as Osama bin Laden. And so the question is, who really pulled the trigger on the raid in Pakistan? Was it Disney? Could be. I mean, this is going to be a multi-hundred-billion-dollar franchise for Disney going forward.
Well, I mean, when you put it into the context of what else has emerged this week, that J.P. Morgan is in Afghanistan, along with the Pentagon. They're arm-in-arm with the Pentagon, extracting the gold from Afghanistan.
Right. So J.P. Morgan, the banker, has the Pentagon as their private force to go in and extract assets from Afghanistan. Disney has the Pentagon working for them to create a new movie franchise to take the place of Pirates of the Caribbean once that's over with. And, well, it all makes perfect sense. What's happening in Greece, though? This is where people are actually in the streets rioting against the Disneys and the J.P. Morgans of the world. There is now open discussion of the IMF talking to the Greek people about selling their treasures, like the Parthenon, to the creditors to pay off the debts that were foisted upon them without their knowledge or in any legal mechanism.
Well, yeah, an IMF executive suggested, he didn't particularly mention the Parthenon, but he did say that Greece has some amazing assets, state assets that they could sell. And some analysts were saying, is he suggesting the Parthenon? Because what is worth 267 billion euros?
Right. So, I mean, this is a leveraged buyout of a country by corporate raiders who use the assets of the country itself to collateralize the loan to take over the country. This is what we saw during the 1980s and during the leveraged buyout boom during the Drexel-Burnham period, when the assets of the company are put up as collateral to arrange a loan to take over the company. And then the raiders take over the company. They sell everything but a few bits and bobs that they keep as their profit. And so we're seeing this apply to countries, whether it's Ireland or Greece, Portugal. These are only $200-400 billion acquisitions for these guys, so it's not even as big as a big U.S. corporation. So it's well within their range, and they've got these great assets. Greece has great assets. These tourist attractions bring in lots of money every year, guaranteed. They've got ports, they've got lottery, they've got oil and gas, they've got energy.
Well, by the way, speaking of Disney trademarking SEAL Team 6, which, by the way, was paid for by the U.S. taxpayer, because this is not Blackwater, it's a U.S. taxpayer-funded arm of the military, so why is Disney allowed to trademark it? But you did suggest on Greek television that they trademark democracy and then force the U.S., you know, become like patent trolls and go force the U.S. to pay them a licensing fee if they're going to go spread democracy around the world.
Yeah, exactly. If they can trademark SEAL Team 6, which is U.S. owned by the U.S. taxpayer, effectively, why can't Greece trademark democracy and charge the U.S. for using it in any reference in their system. But as you point out, I mean, it's a gross transgression there that the private entertainment conglomerate can trademark. You know, are they going to trademark the Constitution? I mean, they trademarked Victor Hugo's work to recreate the Hunchback of Notre Dame as a cartoon and things like this nature. So they're part of the whole intellectual property, the IP scam that's been going on for a year, where you're extending intellectual property. But we'll get to that in a second. Let's go back to Greece. So now the people are really digging into the Greek history of how they got into the euro. And so the headline is, Greece had 13 off-market deals with Goldman to hide debts. So first of all, off-market is a euphemism for illegal. Greece had 13 illegal derivative contracts with Goldman, most of which swapped Japanese yen into euro in a 2001 transaction aimed at concealing the true size of the nation's debt, according to European Union's Statistics Office. The amount borrowed through the swaps was due to be repaid with interest, blah, 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 blah. So now they're getting into how, back in 2001, Goldman helped Greece commit fraud as a way to guarantee that Greece would collapse, and then banks like Goldman could swoop in and buy the assets for pennies on the dollar. Just like when the subprime deals, they sold faulty contracts around. They got their hedge fund buddies to buy into it and start selling short, knowing that these things would collapse, and to acquire assets for pennies on the dollar. So here's a real rapacious, predatory force for the economic destruction. And it's still, even though Blank Fine is due to be testifying before Congress for alleged perjury, which we call in this show perjury, and Matt Taibbi has got his piece out on Rolling Stone magazine, right?
Yeah, well, he went through the 600 and something page report from Carl Levin and did his thing where he, you know, put it into phraseology and words that the population would understand. And because of Matt Taibbi's report in the Rolling Stone, Rochdale and also S&P Equity Research have downgraded Goldman, saying that they're vulnerable to criminal prosecution now.
Right. So the risk now of Goldman's illicit behavior and practices are now being reflected on the, which is what I've been saying, you know, to groups like UK Uncut, which is a big protest group here in the UK. If you can bang the table and talk about how companies like Vodafone and Arcadia Group, how they are incurring risk on in terms of the investors who are invested in these companies, then you have a great fight on your hands. Simply by sitting in the lobby of Vodafone or Topshop and, you know, doing a protest like that, it's not as effective as putting out a report. And you can create your own uncut think tank research group and simply put out a report that says, we've done the analysis and we believe that the descent risk to Arcadia Group or Vodafone is going to knock 10 or 20% off the stock price. Now, every single money manager in the world by law must take that on board and consider the viability of that analysis. And just simply by looking at that, enough fear and is introduced into the equation to start killing the stock price, and it starts moving down. Again, I say, as I have said for now 10 years, why the groups out there who are protesting corporate occupation and banking occupation simply don't put out their own reports detailing the risk. And you see exactly what happened with this Matt Taibbi article. He said, look, there's huge risk to the company. And Wall Street responded by downgrading, and Goldman Sachs stock lost $6 billion in a day. And the new target on the stock is $20 billion or $30 billion lower from where the stock's trading currently. So this is a big score for those who are looking to decapitalize the worst monsters amongst us who are sucking the economy dead bone dry. What's happening in the UK these days? The coalition government, are they getting along?
Well, Max, there's actually some protests today in London by pro-cut activists to rally against debt. Hundreds of pro-cuts activists are expected to descend on Westminster today to rally against debt and the first sign of a radical Tea Party-style mass movement to challenge the anti-cut lobbies. Now, it sounds like another corporate-backed group.
This, yeah.
Because here's one of the persons involved. He says there seems to be a belief. This is Mark Littlewood, the former Lib Dem spokesman and now director for the Institute of Economic Affairs, a free market think tank. He said there seems to be a belief that the only reason we are in these problems is the behavior of a few bankers in 2008, but it is down to collective greed of the voting population of this country. We need considerably more cuts.
Well, that's again blaming the rape victim. You know, the rape victim asked for it. And that's the defense lawyer's defense of the rapist. They always try to get the jury to believe that the rape victim was, quote unquote, asking for it. So here you have a group out there on the street saying that the people who are being raped by the banks were asking to be raped. And that's their defense. Now, you know, having a pro-cut protest and absolving the banks in this way is, you know, it's a failure of mainstream media that they don't have our show and other shows more widely disseminated in the mainstream, obviously, because if people heard what we were saying and the fact that it's backed up by how we back things up, there would not be a pro-cut demonstration on the street. So the BBC, the main media outlet in the UK, is complicit in this rape that's going on. Now, well, we were just talking about the BBC yesterday, right? They were, if I can recall, there was a story involving the BBC.
Oh, they were trashing silver.
Oh, right. So the BBC now has run a series of articles trashing silver. Now, they never covered silver during the move on the upside. They never covered gold and silver substantially in terms of the relationship with the fiat currencies and the banking system that's going on. But suddenly, silver being attacked as it has been by the margin hiking CME or various other fund groups or the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, etc. Suddenly the BBC is running a story, you know, and it's, again, they're in the pocket of the vested interest of those who are killing this economy in the UK. So the BBC is not an objective, you know, bystander reporting on the news here. They're actively participating in the criminal activity that's happening on the financial side of the economy in the UK.
Well, they were ridiculing people who buy silver, and yet they've never ridiculed a person like Gordon Brown or a nation like the UK that sells half of their national wealth, their gold supply, at the 5,000-year low.
Look, as Margaret Thatcher said, there is no alternative. When you're talking about silver, there is no alternative. People say, "Oh, it's in a high price or what have you." There is no alternative. What are you talking about in terms of the alternative to silver? British pounds, the coin of the British occupation and destruction of peoples around the world. You know, just when you remember when you're in the British pound, you support things like the story now that came out that unequivocally, Tony Blair was cooked the books on the famous dossier to support an invasion, an illegal invasion and murder of a million people in Iraq.
Yeah, so, but how many people are these pro-cut activists instead are out in the streets protesting? Basically, it's the same thing as in America. They're really saying they don't want minorities or those other sort of people collecting any benefits. But do they care? Is anybody out in the street that more and more and more evidence every single week emerges that Tony Blair and Alistair Campbell invaded and murdered a country for their resources?
That's right. I mean, when you say that Tony Blair is up good for war crimes for mass genocide of a million people, that's not a statement that's an accurate statement. I mean, this is now the evidence is overwhelming. You can't get out of it. The man is a mass murderer, and this is something that I think the UK people should be more. Up to speed on, because the British pound supports mass genocide. So when I say there is no alternative, that you know, you can have silver, which is about getting away from the fiat currency grid and mass murder and Tony Blair committing mass murder, or you can own silver and gold, which is the means by which you can decapitalize the central banking system, the Bank of England system, and all these other banker stirs that have participated in this massive fraud. And, you know, you see it in countries like Greece now, there's mass migration. We were in Athens just a few weeks ago, Stacey. And remember, we were with Terrence Quick, who's the big broadcaster there. And we were driving around, and he pointed out all the shops that are closing. What was the number he said? 60,000 shops closed in the country? Or?
In 1 month in Athens.
I mean, that, and if you looked on the streets, you're driving around the streets, and I would say almost three out of every four shops were shut. They're just shut. They're gone. And now I read today that basically people are fleeing Athens. They're going back to the countryside. The country is just the city's being emptied out completely by these predatory bankers. And remember, just it was 2 years ago that John Paulson and Lloyd Blankfein were in Athens talking about how to carve it up once they destroyed the country with their loan fandango. And, you know, operating with Goldman, of course. Goldman and Morgan are colluding, again, another illegal act, to carve up this country's assets, to destroy the country economically, because it's a relatively small country and they can do so and there's no regulations to stop them.
Yeah, and despite that, you know, I saw in the papers on Friday that they're saying, Greece grew for the first quarter, that their GDP grew and by something like 0.8%. And that's the first growth in 2 or 3 years. But as Terrence Quick said, it was like 60,000. It was a couple tens of thousands of shops just in Athens alone that had shut the previous month, had closed down. And we certainly saw the evidence. We did see all the shops shut down. But the Eurostats or whoever keeps these numbers are saying that Greece just grew.
Well, on a much smaller base, and that rate of growth will not pay the interest on the debt that was put on them illegally. So it's a number that's in a vacuum that without context for that number, it's just, you know, bandied about and again as meaningful when it's not meaningful without the context. And so again, this is propaganda, financial propaganda, using statistical propaganda by the folks that are complicit in the rape and pillage of this poor country, and the people are fleeing. You know, they're getting out of town.
Yeah, well, actually, from a much smaller base, reminds me of a comment I saw on one of our YouTube. Somebody said, "Oh, if the U.S. dollar doesn't collapse, if the U.S. dollar doesn't collapse, will these two be fired? I still like their show; they're entertaining." And then I looked at this U.S. dollar chart from 1971.
Yeah.
It's down 80% in purchasing power. Yeah. And this person was asking if the U.S. dollar collapses.
Yeah.
It's already collapsed. And people just, I guess it's just successful propaganda and whatever it is. People are just Stockholm syndrome. They don't even see what's right there in front of them.
Well, there's a couple of answers to that question. Number one, the dollar, in order to pay the debts off, the policy of the government is to keep debasing the dollar. I mean, that's inflation. When they say they're looking for inflation targets of 2 or 3%, that means that they're targeting dollar currency devaluation, currency debasement. So it's not if or when or should. I mean, that's the policy, and it's been in effect for decades, and its purchasing power has collapsed. So that's point number one. Point number two is that the rapid collapse of the dollar is in the hands of the Silver Liberation Army. I mean, the rapid decline of the dollar is in our hands. As we take physical silver off the market, we are collapsing over-leveraged banks like J.P. Morgan that is part of the government, part of the Fed, and we are guaranteeing the destruction and evisceration of the dollar. So it's not about, well, gee, I wonder passively whether or not this is going to happen. The question is, do you want to participate in your own liberation? That's really the interesting question. Or do you want to continue to be a debt slave? And end up like the people in Greece or the people in Ireland or others around the world that are having to now flee their homes to go to the hills and live like cave people because they just can't deal with it anymore.
That's right. Well, what else has happened this week? Well, we interviewed in the Kaiser Report, we had Eric Sprott and we had Mike Maloney. That happened to be a coincidence of... we book guests weeks and weeks ahead of time. So we had two precious metals experts on the show this week. What did you think of what each of them had to say, Max?
Well, I think that they were sticking to their, you know, stories more or less. And I wasn't overwhelmed by any new revelations. So it was pretty interesting. I think I'm more interested in this, just for pure rhetorical fireworks, in this Carl Denninger headline, who, asks, how much would you pay for a box full of vomit?
Well, that sounds like a question you might hear on the Kaiser Report. So what is he referring to about the box full of vomit?
Well, apparently Business Week magazine... I think it's Business Week. Yeah, Business Week magazine has a big story, and their verdict on the Wall Street is that they're not guilty. They say, why have no executives gone to jail for their roles in the crisis? Perhaps because risk-taking and stupidity aren't criminal.
Uh-huh.
Now, first of all, of course, we just saw one of these guys sentenced to 20 years in jail. So this story, immediately, the expiration date, due sell-by date, just went out with less than 5 minutes after it hit the newsstands with the successful prosecution of that that big guy, Raji dude. But, so this is... risk-taking, of course, they say. They always hear this phrase, well, these guys are taking risk. Well, that's not true. They don't take risk. They put bets on. That's true. But their bets, they're not taking the risk. We take the risk because when the bets go bad, they get the government to bail out them out. And then the government comes along and imposes austerity measures to pay for the risks, the bad risks that these guys took. So they don't take the risk. Now, are they stupid? Well, I mean, they're not stupid either. They're paying themselves hundreds of billions of dollars worth of fees to game the system. That's not stupid. These are gamers. You know, these are gamers who are successful in gaming the system and co-opting the system. So, Carl Denninger, his retort to this was, how much would you pay for a box of vomit? And... he goes on to talk about this in detail, and one of the points that he makes is that he makes some good points here, and this is coming on the tail of the Matt Taibbi story against Goldman Sachs, so which is putting real risk into the prices of these things. And you know, at what point, by the way, Stacey, I think it's very interesting to note that the whole crisis that started in 2008 was started by the real estate collapse, and we had a bump in 2009, but now those prices are below the low since the 2008 crisis began, which means that these banks are going to have to get another huge bailout, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, because the Alt-A stuff, the ninja loans, this is for the... the higher amounts, the jumbo loans, those are starting to reset from this year through next year. So you have a big surge of those happening, and you do see foreclosures increasing again in the U.S. and house prices starting to tumble. So you know, we don't know who owns this. I have a feeling the Fed technically has most of those on their books by now. But, like, will the Fed go broke? And who's going to, and is it just going to be the Treasury taking on all the Fed's debts this year?
Yeah, well, what the response so far has been to keep printing more money. And I was listening to Jim Rickards this morning, you know, talking about gold and the return of the gold standard, which he says is inevitable. And he talks about different ways the U.S. is going to go back to the gold standard and what this will mean to the price of gold. But by the way, you know, his range on the price of the gold and going back to the gold standard would be between $3,000 and $30,000 an ounce based on how you monetize various money supply metrics. But he was saying the inflation wave that was started in response to the 2008 crisis, that had a 2-year to 3-year lag, and which was extended because we saw it, the inflation pop up in China first, didn't we, in other countries. Now that cycle has come to a close, and it's being returned to where it came from, to the States. So the inflation now, the rise in food and energy that we're seeing today, is it took 2 years to hit, but now it's coming as a result of the 15 or 20 trillion that was printed to bail the bankers out in 2008. So that, and now as the inflation hits, they're on board to print another 15 to 20 trillion. So now we enter the point of course, the Fed would like inflation because it helps them debase the value of the debts, and that's the stated goal. But will it be orderly, as we've seen over the past 20 or 30 years, or will it be a disorderly hyperinflation or currency collapse? That's the question we're talking about. The question is not whether the dollar is going to collapse or not. The question is whether it's collapsing in an orderly way, as it has been for 30 years, or will it be in a disorderly way, in a hyperinflation way. And I think, you know, I'm kind of, and guys like Gonzalo Lira, you know, they're kind of on the side of a disorderly dollar collapse, which aside from getting, you know, eviscerating the dollar, it's a lot more fun.
Well, yeah, I believe that too, because it's just a universal axiom that that's the way it happens. Hemingway did say, when asked, his character asked, how did you go bankrupt? Very slowly, and then all of a sudden, I think that's the way it happens. Once all their creditors realize that they're never going to be able to pay back those debts. I mean, they've held it afloat by printing the money, and you see that in all the money supply figures and all the Fed numbers. A lot of people expected a great deflation in 2008, but you don't see that in the numbers. You see all those debts still there. They're the zombie debts. They're still alive. They're maybe not being serviced. Nobody can pay them off, but they haven't been marked down like they were in the Great Depression. People, you know, these debts are still floating around. So that money supply is still there.
Right. There's the debts are still in the bank's balance sheets. The money that was created, it went offshore and it didn't create what is called the velocity. You didn't see the money velocity, which would mean that the money begets more loans, begets more loans, begets more money, which you see in an inflationary period. So but this is, you know, coming to a close. The velocity is picking up now as you see the tsunami of cash return. And curious to see. I mean, there's a bit of a guessing game to guess at what price gas in the U.S. before the revolution. Because the U.S., people always ask me, why there's no revolution in the States? Why? And the answer is the price of gas is still cheap. But now it's creeping higher. So the question is, what price gallon of gas before the revolution? I was on a show here in Paris recently, and my feeling is that it's currently around $4 a gallon. I think when it gets to $6 a gallon, we're going to start to really, you know, see the beginning of a genuine revolution. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I've been there a few times in the last 6 months or so. And, well, when I was back there in September, I mean, it's quite shocking. It's quite dramatic between then and just this last trip last week in terms of how little gasoline you get when you go to the gas station with $20, you know, that used to fill up pretty much 3/4 of the tank of my mother's Honda. And this last time it filled about 1/4. And you see $20 is only 4 gallons. And, you know, there are great distances in America to travel. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot compared to Europe when, you know, the gasoline costs $8 a gallon here. But distances are shorter between things. Cars are smaller. But everywhere you go in America, you have to drive for half an hour. Everything's always at least half an hour drive away.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't see it not affecting people. And it, you know what? That also put into context me. Every single time when I went to fill up the gas tank and what cost something like $60, I thought that's 2 ounces of silver. It puts into context like how much an ounce of silver is and what people are gambling on it or what they're, you know, just what that buys. And it doesn't buy that much gasoline at the moment.
No. And so what's your price?
What's my price? I think it was $6. Probably, though, around 7, it's really going to crack, like sort of violence in the street. I think you're already seeing signs of breakdown at 4. But, you know, it's going to start hitting the middle class, upper middle class. Lots of SUVs there, by the way. My mother was saying that in 2008, a lot of people, remember when the price went to $147 and gasoline prices were over $4 the first time, that a lot of people started to get rid of their SUVs and buy smaller cars. But as soon as the prices came down, they all like traded it back in and people started getting SUVs again. So I did see a lot of SUVs. I was surprised that despite the price so high and despite the depression that America's in, that there were so many SUVs around.
Yeah. And people are, I'm thinking $6, you think $7. So within $6 or $7, we should start to see revolts on the street. And then the global insurrection will be in North America, Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. So it'll be there. All quadrants of the global economy will be in some stage of revolt. Now, on Monday, the U.S. will be above their debt ceiling. They haven't expanded the debt ceiling. They haven't extended the debt ceiling, but they will have sold more debt than is allowed under the current debt ceiling. And again, Rickards has been talking about, no, I'm sorry, James Turk, in an interview a couple of days ago, thinks that they will vote to expand the debt ceiling this August. No, they'll vote to extend the debt ceiling by $2 trillion, which will take them into the next election, the next presidential election. So I mean, that would be a $16 trillion or so debt ceiling. But on Monday, the Treasury Department auctioned off $56 billion in new debt Wednesday, enough to take the U.S. over the federal debt ceiling when the 3- and 10-year notes settle on Monday. Treasury officials last month flagged May 16th as the day the government would hit $14.294 trillion debt limit. So again, people say, oh, the dollar, is it going to collapse? Well, as you pointed out, the U.S. prints dollars and then they buy back the dollars and then they put the debt that they use to buy back the dollars on the balance sheet, or some of it's on the official, some of it's on the hidden balance sheets. So this debt is still expanding quite rapidly, which is going to be met with a wall of more money printing.
Yeah, but I mean, the other thing is just like we were talking about the Parthenon being an asset of the nation of Greece. It's something that was essentially collateralizing the wealth of that nation. It was the wealth of that nation. In the U.S., its rule of law, the fact that it's a republic. Remember, it used to not be a democracy. It was established as a republic. And this is just another sign of yet another rule of law being disregarded. Because we all know that the U.S. no longer declares war. Congress no longer declares war. The president just decides to start invading people or bombing people. And another thing happening this weekend, Max, is that technically the war in against Libya becomes illegal because Barack Obama has not sought the approval of Congress, and you have to do that within 60 days, and he hasn't done that. It expires this weekend, so there is no rule of law. There are loads of laws on the book and in the Constitution, but they just disregard it. And because they're a democracy now and no longer a republic, as long as enough people don't care, then it doesn't matter.
Right. And what's going to happen this weekend after it expires?
Nothing. As long as more than 51% of the population does not care or doesn't know, then they're okay because it's a democracy.
Yeah. But they're saying they're just going to restart the clock.
Yeah, they're gonna pause.
Yeah.
For a few minutes.
Right.
And then they're gonna restart the clock.
Right. So according to the law, the U.S. can't be involved in a NATO exercise for more than a few months. That timing expires this weekend. So the U.S. is going to withdraw 100% for a few hours, and then they'll restart the clock and go back in. Now, again, that's just gaming the system. That's saying the law is there to be gamed, not to be adhered to. And the people in the U.S. and the U.K. around the world applaud people who successfully game the system. And the net result is that there's huge wealth transfer going on, and 99.9% of the people are having their wealth stolen, their property stolen, their sovereignty stolen. But they still applaud those who are gaming the system in this way. But it is kind of shocking that again, there's no media. If there was a journalistic integrity, some kind of free press, that just wouldn't happen, because it just wouldn't happen. But there is no free press. The fact that they can just game the system in this way, and again, how many people, the people who are really shocking to me are the people like in the UK that they sent into Iraq that died, the servicemen that died. And now with this recent revelations, it's clear that Tony Blair went into Iraq to make money for himself, and that was his motivation. And he put UK servicemen lives in the way, and he killed those people too. And the families of those people don't seem to care. The families of the service people in America that are dying in these wars don't seem to care. I don't even think they notice. It's like, those fat, obese people in America who have babies that they're giving birth to. They're so fat they don't notice until the baby pops out. I don't think these people even know they've lost children in these wars. They're too preoccupied with, Groupon or something. They don't even know their own kids are being murdered.
Yeah, but, based on 5,000 years of human history that we know about from records, it seems that a large percentage of people prefer that sort of feudal system where there are certain people above the law, and that they, for some reason, think, because they're rich or powerful or something, that they are not, the laws don't apply to them. Many people have died for lords across the centuries for no reason. They're both human beings with the same genetic material. There's no reason why, they should want to die for them, but they do. And I think that's the same with, enough people just don't care about the debt, about the genocides, about how messed up the whole situation is, how many bankers are plundering destroying our financial system. You have people out in the street today, right now in London, defending, protesting against people who are against bankers stealing our wealth.
Right, who are bought and paid for by the bankers. The problem is that, the brain, I think, takes up 40% of all the energy burned during the average day of the average person. It just takes a lot of energy to think. Mm-hmm. And, especially if you have a bad diet and you're taking a lot of drugs and you're inactive, you're passive, you just don't have the calories necessary to move the brain into thinking, because it just takes up too much energy. And the whole evolution of humans over the years has been, how do you get more energy and oxygen to the brain to expand the brain. This is the story of humans, why they are quote-unquote successful. But now, people are just couldn't be bothered to think anymore. It just takes too much freaking energy. It's all that 40% energy drain. Imagine if you were to stop thinking, you'd have that extra energy to do things you really want to do, like stick Twinkies down your throat.
Well, yeah, there's a lot to that. But you know what? I've had some jet lag recently, and you know, it's hard to fall asleep, and you know, I'll go online, look at things like that, and I still stay awake. And then now I have a physics book, and I swear to God, what you're saying is true, that you know, it takes so much energy to think, because I can read about a page, and then I start to fall asleep, because it's like I'm trying to put my head, wrap my mind around the notions and the concepts being put forth.
Right. Okay. And that's looking at an advanced kind of high-end mathematical discussion and physics text. But, you know, what we're talking about is people's inability to read, you know, the instructions on a bottle of shampoo. You know, the fact that it says,
say champagne.
You know, the fact that it says, you know, lather, rinse, repeat. That's beyond their thinking capacities. That's too much thinking. So they end up drinking the shampoo. They don't know what to do with the shampoo. It's like that movie Idiocracy. I think that's a really a movie that will really kind of, it won't be like 1984. It won't be like Brave New World, you know, dystopian nightmare. It'll be like Idiocracy, where people are watering their lawns with Gatorade and wondering why it doesn't grow, and you know, drinking shampoo and wondering why they get sick, and you know, sitting on a toilet watching TV, you know, just Idiocracy. It's complete. It's just Idiocracy. Here's a good story. U.S. debt limit talks embroiled in chaos.
Yeah, the volatility. Remember, we were talking about that this over lunch yesterday, about the emerging volatility, especially in currencies. I think that was one of our top 10 trends to look for 2011. Remember at the beginning of the year on Kaiser Report?
Yeah.
We said that as the global financial system and the power system starts to change, just like when the British Empire was collapsing, or empires before that were collapsing, there's a lot of volatility, and we're seeing that in all sorts of wild, wild swings in the currency markets. I guess the Forex market almost blew up on Friday late afternoon.
Yeah, the currency is the volatility is clearly going to increase. And again, that's masked because things like the volatility index are being manipulated just like all these other indexes. You know, we wanted to make that film, The 10 Most Abusive Indexes in History, which I think would be a really fascinating film. But the volatility is going to increase because the, you know, the Ponzi scheme is being unplugged, and there's no new Ponzi's in terms of the big, big, big picture. Of course, the big, big, big picture is the 100-year growth fueled by oil, and oil has peaked. But U.S. debt limit talks embroiled in chaos. So they're just talking about how the fact that, you know, they're going over the $14.3 trillion debt limit that they go over on Monday, and the plan to deal with it is they have no plan. They're just they want to get rid of. They just have to shut down. They have to shut down. They're going to shut down Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, which are technically bankrupt already. They've already borrowed all the money against those programs. So the country is just going into a chaotic nightmare. The Ponzi scheme that was in place for 30 years, which required ever more increasing of money, has come to an end because they've increased money. It hasn't increased money velocity. There is no lending going on. There is no economic activity. It's just the ravages of a collapsed system taking this thing down into the abyss, into the muck.
Yeah, and you know, there are so many people out in the street saying, yeah, we should get rid of Medicare or and Social Security, even though they're the ones that it's from deducted from their paycheck every single month. This, what, 16% deducted from their paycheck that goes allegedly to Social Security. it's been actually going to war.
Yeah.
And the military industrial complex and the financial industrial complex. And now I wonder how many people would have supported that. Apparently quite a lot, because they're out there now marching saying, you know, cut our Social Security that I've been paying 16% of my income in every single month for the past 30 years. Get rid of it.
Yeah, to go pay for the war. Yeah. Hey, you know, I promised my friend over there at Zombie Bank Death Squad we play part of this song. What? Oh, yeah. What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
Yeah.
Do you want me to put it in post production?
Yeah, you could put it in post production. Do you want to put it in at the end or during the middle or?
Yeah, we'll play. We'll use that for the last three or four minutes.
Okay, that's good.
So that gives us only like 5 minutes left of the show, Max Kaiser.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then we're heading out to the countryside to go breathe some oxygen.
Oh, okay, some oxygen. All right, I like oxygen.
Hey, John Stewart actually came up with a funny one when he said foxygen. This is what people who watch Fox News breathe foxygen.
Yeah, they're breathing foxygen. Yeah, he goes after Fox News every single show.
Yeah, but it's so easy. It's the content of his show is written for him by Fox.
Okay, so, but my question is, so he's a news outlet. They're a news outlet. He's attacking the news outlet that he competes with, but it's a bit of a vacuous, attack. You know,
he doesn't go after, on occasion he's gone after some bankers and he's done it very well. You know, his brother is the head of the, New York Stock Exchange or something. He's like some head of the programming or something. I don't know what he is, but he goes after the easy targets. There's a story, by the way, speaking of Fox, in the New York Times today, where these group of investors in property are suing Donald Trump because they bought these properties, Trump properties in Florida, on the Gulf of Mexico, because his name was on it. And they thought it therefore guaranteed Trump quality.
Right.
And it turns out that Trump was just licensing his name to these property developers for $4 million and two public appearances. Right. With them. So they thought Donald Trump was involved with this, and now they're suing because they're saying the properties aren't worth as much because they actually weren't built by Donald Trump, who they thought guaranteed quality.
Well, you're right. I heard Trump talking about this and saying that it actually worked out very well for those people. Because although the real estate market collapsed, the fact that this lawsuit came up when it did meant that they are in negotiations to get all or part of their deposits back, but it prevented them from actually buying the units, which would have meant that they would have had catastrophic losses.
Oh, okay.
So he said he's actually done them a favor by minimizing their losses to only all or part of the deposit. And because if they had bought the unit outright, they would have now be 70% underwater.
Yeah, but there's also, it says a lot that there are people out there today that look at Donald Trump and say, hey, wow, he's a quality guy. I want to buy something that he's involved with. You know, he apparently sells Trump mattresses, Trump towels and things. And people buy these things because his name is on it.
Yeah, well, he's got a brand name made that the media and the shows that he's involved with. Trump is a brand name, you know, and you can go to the grocery store in America and pick up something called Velveeta cheese, and you know, it's not cheese, is it? It's an aerosol product made up of various trans fats and coloring. It's not cheese, but people see the word cheese and they buy it. You know, people see the word Trump and they think, oh, I'm on a celebrity TV show.
Well, it did make me laugh to think someone...
When is he going to start, you know, licensing his name to hair care products? So he can get your, you know, he can get a do like Trump, the Trump do, or the Trump wig. I mean, if I get a wig and look like Trump, I mean, you know, you look like a media mogul real estate shyster, you know, and just buying the Trump wig.
Well, I'm sure that he could do well in like Palm Beach. A lot of people look like that down there.
Yeah, he's thousands of people in Florida and Vegas and Nevada look like Donald Trump. They're like 60, 70 year old guys with comb overs from you know Hades, and you know they talk big and they made a few bucks, you know, 20 years ago, and they're still snapping their fingers and think they're Frank Sinatra.
That's a good way to end, because now we're gonna go to. The zombie
bank death squad.
Death squad.
Now I think this tune, which came to me from you know, people sending me stuff, and I think this is the beginning. This is the first tune that I've heard that I think is reflective, genuinely, of the angst out there in the world, especially in the UK, about what's really going on. I think this is could be the beginning, the first shot in a new wave of music that's been. Created from the genuine hurt and pain that's being inflicted upon the people from the Thatcher-esque-like banksters that are, you know, imposing austerity measures to bail out their friends. This is a pretty good one, I think.
Okay, well, here it is.
All right, well, bye, y'all.
With the heads of the anus, but we've seen it all. the planet in Vegas. But we live in a finite life, we better get blameless.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
When you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do? What you gonna do? When you gonna do? What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?